everybody. Welcome to Conversations with Chauke podcast with me, Pabalo Chauke, as your host. I'm passionate about Africa, education, and social justice. Today, I am excited, I am honored to have the very intelligent, empathetic, pioneering, and very humble Malabo Malupe as a guest in studio today. Woohoo! Welcome, Malabo.
Thank you, Pabalo.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm very nervous about this interview, but I'm very good.
I don't know, are you nervous? Because I was like, it's me. I'm very relaxing. That's why I started this whole thing. You know what I mean? Because I'm able to perhaps, and this is me blowing my own horn, I'm able to make sure that the guests are relaxed. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like I'm still being interviewed. So, and I have stage fright, which is something people don't know. So,
also, that's actually important to actually get into at some point because you're doing very amazing in terms of your career, your achievements. And I guess people would be not shocked, but would be surprised to learn that you have stage fright as well. But you don't have to be scared because this is not an interview. It's a conversation.
Okay.
We are talking. Okay.
Yes.
And, but then to start there, tell us, the people at home want to know, who is Malabo? And that's a very broad question, I know, but like...
Yeah, I think it's a very difficult question to answer because I don't think you can encapsulate a person in like a few words in a conversation. But I think I'm going to base it on Sereto sa ko gae.
Okay, come through.
Ke nna motlogolo wa Malobi, ngwana marana go hlola madumela go retwa.
Oh, they have to ululate at some point.
Yes, I'm very passionate about working with people and I'm very passionate about genetics and counseling, hence I'm a genetic counselor, but also making health services actually in general. I just learned that the other day that my bigger passion is actually health services in general to be accessible to all people. And obviously I'm passionate about certain things and especially issues that affect women, be it health or be it social justice.
Okay. So, no, that's a, I mean, obviously you described, I forgot to even add other things that you are. She is the first black genetic counselor in South Africa. She is currently a PhD student at the University of Cape Town. She's a fashionista. She's an Instagrammer. Like, she has videos that she does and interviews people. She has a Twitter page where she continues to do her work in genetic counseling. But also, she's just like a fun-loving person as well. You know what I mean? So I think, obviously, I forgot to mention those as well as I was saying, but I'm glad that she started that conversation. It's 2021 now, and in 2019, that's when you were everywhere, in the newspapers, on TV, hey, radio, you're on a tour. I think you're on a global tour, you know what I mean? Like, where you're like, people were actually getting to know you, because that's when it was announced that in the country, you were the first Black Genetic Counselor. And I'd say, even now, if I'm not mistaken, you still hold that title. It's not that you always hold it, but I think you are the only one, or are there more?
So I'm still the only one, but another one is yet to qualify. Hopefully this month they send feedback and say that he's qualified. Then at least there'll be two black genetic counselors in the country.
Yo.
And then in the next 2 years, another three black genetic counselors should qualify. So it's going to be two females and a male. And now they identify as female and male. And now the one who's qualifying now, I think for now he identifies as male. He hasn't clarified.
Crying at you saying for now. But I mean, okay. No, but also I think I don't want to get into that now because that's not what I'm talking to you about. But like, because then male, female, man, woman, confuses people in terms of sex and gender. Because I think sex is much more, and this is what you do as well.
Yeah.
Sex is biological and gender is the one that socially constructed. Right? So I just wanted to say that, or like be careful with that, because you're saying they still identify. And I think if we talk about who I think you're talking about, anyway, I want to talk to you about you mainly. How does it feel to be the first black genetic counselor?
It's twofold. It's a very amazing feeling because you're like, yay, I did something. My whole family can be extra proud. And when I got into the career, actually, I found out about genetic counseling first. Then when I researched more, then I found out there aren't any black genetic counselors. So that was quite interesting for me. So I was already set in the career. So I didn't just do it to be the first black genetic counselor. I was already set that I'm going to apply. I think it's been amazing because I think I'm part of the people who are helping to grow it. But obviously, being the first Black one has a lot of issues that you have to go through alone, because no one has actually been through the whole entire process. And you have to go through that whole entire process, and you know there'll be issues of racism. You know that people would say, I mean, I've had people say to me directly that, oh, you only got this because you're Black. And
no
it would
ways.
Shock me, yes. It shook me because I'm just like, I worked hard for this. I applied for this on time and my work speaks for itself. So mm-hmm. excuse me, what do you mean I'm getting this because I'm Black? Maybe it added, but I think my work speaks for itself. And even if you were to completely blind my work and not put my race or my name or anything to it, you would also see it. So I feel like sometimes when people aren't getting certain things, then and they maybe, I don't know if it's jealousy or what it is, then they'll come back and say, yeah, we didn't get this, but my neighbor just got it because she's Black. And then it makes them feel better about themselves. So
they don't have to look at the fact that you are better than them. Because it's like, if I say it's because of other things besides your excellence, I'm able to then separate my, I don't know, not even guilt, but my shame or my embarrassment that I'm less, not less than, but I mean, people are very competitive, sadly,
yes.
especially in the capitalist world. And I think obviously then it's time to also give you imposter syndrome in a way.
Yeah.
And make you doubt your worthiness or your skills?
I think maybe yes and no. I think you... I have moments where I go, oh my God, like I'll be busy with something, be it work or whatever project I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
Then I have a little bit of a panic moment where I'm going, oh my God, this can't be anything but good or excellent or perfect. Because if this is not good, they're going to go, oh, there goes that Black person. We knew that she wasn't good enough.
Also, the pressure of you holding sort of expectations, you represent the whole race.
Yes.
And that's the unfair thing about like, being the first Black, especially,
yes.
or the only one, right? Because then whatever you do, whether especially when it's bad, then it represents all of us. But when it's good, you are exceptional.
Exactly.
You're not like the rest. Mm. So that's very interesting.
So, yeah, that's very true. I've always had that prayer. Sure, I remember speaking to my supervisor because I was just like in my head a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt pressure. And she's like, where is it from? Because at that moment, I did not know where it was from. I just felt that I can't fail because I have to do this for all the Black people.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't do badly because I need to do this for all the other Black people who we want to come into the system, who we want that when they see their applications can be like, okay, you are worthy of coming in. I didn't want them to see another application from someone from University of Limpopo and be like, yo, yarre, we don't want these people, you know, because she came and she was so bad. So I think that pressure is always there where you need to do your best, if I put it that way,
mm-hmm.
and you need to be sort of honest with yourself and always try to be kind and be polite and don't... It's very hard because I've been through it. Don't let everything get to you because it's easy to let things get to you. I remember when, I think I was a student or an intern, genetic counselor, I can't remember. And someone, they did something that I was suspecting for a while that I'm being treated differently by some of the students because of my race. And that day they said something that actually confirmed it and that hit me hard. So I went to the bathroom and I just sat there and I just cried. And rinsed my face, wiped it off. You know, you have to like drink water, get your eyes unread again, and then went back to the office and continued. Because it's a situation where I did not know, I couldn't respond because I was in shock. What are you going to say in that moment? But all I felt was just angry and upset. And I was just like, this is what they actually think of me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they do it subconsciously, if they are conscious of it, but I mean... Living in the world that we live now, I think there's enough information on the internet to try your best to not, I don't know if it, is it called microaggression?
Micro, passive aggressiveness, microaggression.
All of that. Mm-hmm. There's enough, especially towards Black people, you know enough not to do certain things, I mean, and say certain things or do certain things. But that's when I knew that these ones, they are judging me 100% based on, actually, it was in my second year, based on the color of my skin and
mm-hmm.
not based on how well I do work.
But I think obviously there's issues of whatever you do, your work, there's issues where people have issues. And so when they see you, especially being a Black woman, it's like they don't necessarily even consider that you might be excellent on merit. So it's like, ah, there she goes. You know what I mean? So I think don't personalize it, right? But as you said, we are telling people they shouldn't internalize those issues that people perhaps throw at them.
Mm.
Okay, but like, what are you doing to make sure then that, I mean, you sort of partly answered this, to make sure that you are not the only one. You said something about like working hard, but what else are you doing to make sure that you increase the number of black and female, particularly black female genetic counselors in South Africa?
So I try my best to mentor maybe ones who are interested. So I know from the University of Limpopo, I'll always ask each year, are there any fourth years that are interested in genetic counseling? Last year I created a WhatsApp group because it was easier. Then I could send them resources, send them this online short course that's done. I don't know if it's Coursera or some other company online. You know these ones that always have courses. And then I'll be like, okay, do this because it needs to be on an application. It shows that you take initiative. And the reason I do that is sometimes they appreciate when people come and shadow you in clinic for a day or two, whatever. But when you are in University of Limpopo or you're a black person or you're poor, where are you going to get the funds to go to Joburg or to go to Cape Town, pay for an Airbnb? I mean, you can't go for a day because you're traveling many hours the day before, and then you have to shadow clinic and then Airbnb or hotel or lodge. It's a lot of money, you know? So I thought to myself, actually, let me encourage them to do this introduction into genetic counseling short course. I went through it just to check if it was proper for them to do, and I was happy. So then I'm like, okay, no, they should do this, add this to their application. I helped them write applications, cover letters. So I'll edit them, give them tips on what kind of things they would look for, you know. And the ones that I actually don't think are like really into it or passionate about it, you can tell from early. And then I spoke to one of them and said, what is your actual true passion? Because I could tell. And the passion was medicine. Then I'm like, okay, you can apply for genetic counseling as a backup, but make sure you're applying for medicine everywhere, because genetic counseling isn't going to
fill that void.
Fill your void,
the void of being a medical doctor.
Exactly. Yeah? So I tried to do that for them. And if anyone else, people email me and I give them as much information as I can as possible. I always tell people, apply to both institutions. I tell them when applications open and they should actually contact them themselves. So I tried to do all of those. And I have stage fright, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the only reason I agreed to all those interviews was to create awareness about genetic counseling.
That's where I wanted to. You're taking it somewhere. The visibility part, because I mean, so you're doing a lot, and part of that actually. Before I even asked you about visibility, are you not tired? Like, isn't no? And you can be honest. Don't, because I know you're very empathetic. You're a giver. You are kind, and that's who you are. And you care about the black struggle. But how? You know what I mean? You're working, you're doing your PhD, you're mentoring people, you have these WhatsApp groups, you have a Twitter page where you teach people about genetic counseling.
Yeah.
You do an Instagram thing, which I'm going to ask you about at some point. Obviously, Clara, but like now, the question here is, are you not tired?
I think some days I'm very tired. It depends on my work and PhD week. So when I have students that need help, I'm more happy to help when people come to me in advance.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going to come to me a week before applications, it's not going to happen, because I'm very truthful to them and I'll say to you, okay, I will read your application later. Please give me 2 weeks. When are the closing dates? What are the closing dates? And if they can tell me all of that, then I can plan ahead, which makes it much easier, you know? I don't like people come to me last minute because I have a lot of work to do and I can't read your application stuff.
Like now. Do it now.
And submit.
Like,
yes.
What about, have
because
a timetable?
You know, exactly. Mm-hmm. So having a diary, having a to-do list is very helpful. I love to sleep. You know, I have to sleep like 7 to 9 hours so that I can be functional. Like anything less than that, it doesn't work for me.
Wait, how many hours?
7 to 9.
I had 9 and I'm like, wait, what? Isn't that too much?
Because
according to doctors, you should get 6 to 8. You are getting an hour more. 9 hours. I didn't know this about you.
Yeah.
So you can sleep 9 hours, like go straight.
Yes, I'll just get up to go to the toilet maybe if I drank water or something till late. But I need I can sleep.
Whoa, okay, no. I didn't know this about you.
I also don't struggle to sleep. That's okay. The other thing. I think my thing is, even if I've slept and then, you know, your body clock will wake you up around 7 or 8,
mm-hmm.
I can go back to sleep very easily. Like,
I'm jealous of that because I struggle to sleep at night generally. No, like it's a problem. I'm like, yo,
I'm God's favorite child.
He's like, sleep, my child. Wake up. You can sleep however long you want.
Yes. So that's why I need people to send things to me on time because it helps me plan ahead. And most of the people I've had who are serious, because people who are not serious, you can see. And genetic counseling is not one of those careers that you step into if you're not serious about it, because it will smack you.
So it's challenging already, but if you don't like something, it's more like you're not going to enjoy it anyway. And then when it's hard, you're not going to want to do the work.
Yeah, and never mind enjoyment. I feel like the amount of work you have to do, how you have to, what's the word? I can't find the word. It requires a lot of self-introspection, but you're doing clinical work, you're doing coursework, you're doing your research,
mm-hmm.
and it requires you to love it because it needs to continue to push you and needs to keep you motivated for you to actually move forward. If you don't love it, you're going to struggle and you're going to probably hate every single moment because it is a lot of work. And people come in not knowing how much work you have to do. It's a lot of work that you need to do,
mm-hmm.
especially during your first and second year of your master's.
So it's a two-year program.
It's a two-year master's. And then we need 2 years of internship. But they've worked it out that because we spend a lot of time in clinics in our second year of our master's, that counts as your first year internship for HPCSA. And then you do one more year post-degree.
Which is fair. Okay, sounds fair. Mm. Okay. Okay, so but then, I mean, for a lot of people who don't know what genetic counseling is, and obviously at some point I actually want to get to much more fun things that you do besides genetic counseling, like your hair and fashion, because you're very passionate about that. But for now, obviously you're first genetic counselor. That's what mostly claim to fame. What is it that you do exactly? What is genetic counseling?
Genetic counseling is a field in medicine.
Okay.
And for you to be a genetic counselor, obviously you need to have done the master's, and they accept students from who've done either BSc psychology or nursing.
Okay.
What we basically do is we help families to adjust to diagnosis of a genetic condition or provide you with the risks. And we are able to do that because we're specialty or specialized training in genetics and in counseling. We interpret medical information for our patients and sometimes for doctors who are running clinics without genetic counselors, and they get results that they don't quite understand. So we can help them interpret those results for them. But I feel the most important part is also how we do our counseling. It's very non-directive. We present our information to you clearly, and we provide you with options and let you as the patient or the client make the decision that's best for you and aligned with your own personal belief system. And that's what I love about it, because it's different to other fields of medicine, because we genetic counselors don't know what's best for the patient. The patient or the client knows what's best for them. So we are very strong on non-directiveness and patient autonomy and just helping to them to navigate it. Because imagine, let me use a condition that everyone knows, albinism, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you give birth to a child who's white in skin color, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you're a black woman. And in the nursery, they just like look at your baby and you have the biggest shock in your life. How are you going to adjust to that? What's going to help you interpret or explain why this has happened? And we know in some cultures, there's a lot of blame on women. So being a genetic counselor, we're actually able to explain the genetic mechanism of the condition that, no, albinism actually requires both parents to be carriers for a child to have it. It has nothing to do with the mom only. So I think that's why I really love what we do, because it's so patient-focused, and we give a lot of time. Well, I do. I can't speak for everyone. I give a lot of time and effort to the patient, and we advocate for them for a lot of things. Usually they come and have other issues that maybe might or might not be related to us, but we'll refer them to the necessary services.
Listen, as you're talking, I'm like, she's amazing. She's amazing. She's amazing. Because you are, like, you're very articulate as well. So actually, because you're like, oh, I have stage fright. Where was the stage fright when you actually explained what you did? Because you did it so... I'm hoping that actually the audience is learning something and learned something, and I'm certain that they did. So thank you for that, right? No, you're very articulate, by the way. So I just want you to know.
You know, I'm sweating, right?
That's me. It's hot in Cape Town. If you're watching on video, it's like what, 40 degrees or something. Let me check. Actually,
no, Pavel, it's 27 and 29.
It feels like 100 degrees. It's that hot. I'm gonna check now and even show you. Okay, it's 26. Which is like, feels like 100. It's like
sweating.
Okay. I'm glad that I'm not alone though. Actually, at some point I'm gonna need water as well. But the question then is, there's a price to pay, and I don't wanna obviously influence you, but there's a price to pay for visibility. Because you were you still are very visible even now. But I think 2019, when the news came out and broke that you are the first black female or black in general Trinity counselor, so regardless of gender, you were the first one. It's interesting to note. Thank you so much for the water. That obviously you went on tour, you were on TV and whatever, and you were celebrated, which was beautiful to watch. I remember that vividly. And I think, did I know you then? I'm not sure if I knew you.
You did, because you worked with some people in my department.
Oh, yes. But we're not friends yet, I think.
No, we worked together. I was doing that course with you. I was your facilitator.
Oh, so we also do a course. Well, I'm not going to advertise that. That work. I also might work in genomics sometimes, somehow. But I don't want to promote companies. This is about you. But yeah, so the point is here, you had a lot of visibility. How, as someone who has stage fright, like you, as you claim, how did it feel, or how did you deal with? Because I'm thinking, from experience personally, there are pros and cons to being very hyper-visible. So there's a price to fame. What was your experience?
It was very nice. Very nerve-wracking. I don't know if you can explain, like, you enjoy it. And as I said earlier on, the greatest thing for me was, okay, you're doing this to create awareness about genetic counseling because you want more black kids out there. Someone said to me actually that, no, Manu, but you kind of have to do it because black kids need to know that they can make it. And that I went to a historically black university. It's still a black university, so we can just call it that, which is University of Limpopo. And it's important to show people that it doesn't matter which university you start at, you can actually end up somewhere very great, you know? So I think part of the reason why I was able to push myself and continue doing it is my passion that people need to know about this, because in the following years, I want to be able to hear that, oh, we had so many applications and we had a lot of black people applying too, because that's the other thing. And people don't know it's a service. And also people at home to know that, oh, but if I have this, I can actually go to the clinic, go to wherever and say, I have this condition. Can I please be referred to genetic services? I know we don't have services in all the provinces, but some provinces work together. So like in Limpopo, they can refer them to Steve Biko, you know?
Yeah, like, and you can travel because it's very important.
The hospital even organizes that if you're a hospital patient, like a state patient, so they can organize for you to travel there. So that was my greatest thing, is that we do this, you have to remember the end goal, and sometimes not everything is about me. I don't think we're brought in this world to just make things about us. Yes, there's all the self-love, wada, 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 but with self-love, you have to love other people. And you have to know in the right situations, you have to put other people first. And that's what sort of pushed me to be like, I think God has brought me here for a greater purpose. And if I'm not going to fulfill that, then what's the point?
I hear you. But like, who heals the healer? Who saves the hero? Because you are out here, you go to clinic, and you speak, and I'm just thinking about how heavy that is. Like, I always wonder how therapists, where do you debrief? Where do you go? Or like, what do you do? Do you need another counselor to counsel you? Because you see very shocking and sometimes painful cases. How do you deal with that?
So South Africa's genetic counseling field is different from other countries overseas, mainly because we don't specialize in one field. You can choose to just do prenatal in private. But if you work in state, we're seeing everything from prenatal. So prenatal is like when people are pregnant. And then we see adult onset conditions. We see pediatrics. We see cancers. Yeah. So Yes. So in all that, I'm sorry, for everyone at home, pediatrics, it's for children, like care of kids and kids hospitals. So it is heavy. And that's why from my master's, from when we start training, which is in your first day of master's, we have something called reflection.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about once a month with one of the genetic counselors or both of them, and you talk about any difficult cases that you would have experienced, how they made you feel, and you reflect on that. And then we also had group supervision. But now I've moved from UCT as an employee. I'm still there as a PhD student. So as an employee, I'm at Tigerberg. But I debrief with my supervisor from UCT because we already have that relationship. And I think a lot of things I don't have to re-explain in a
because she gets...
She already knows the story, yes, and she has the foundation, yes. So as genetic counselors, we are required by HPCSA to have debriefs. I don't know how often. I'm just going to do it once a month. Because, I mean, we do see very traumatic cases. I mean, I saw in the past few weeks, all cases are heartbreaking sometimes. Sometimes it's good. So it's we celebrate when it's good news and we have a good outcome. But often you have very heartbreaking sessions, and I had two, and the one was just traumatic. And maybe because I'm also like a little bit of a feminist, it also just hit me because I was just like, this is so unfair, woman, what, you know? And also I'm like,
okay,
you know.
I'm not going to ask about the case because you don't want to.
Yes, I can't give information. Yeah, I was like,
tell us, give us what happened, who, give us their name.
Yes,
I'm joking,
no,
I know.
But
I know
it really can. Affected me, and that one I couldn't wait for whenever I...
And have sent you a message.
Yes, I had to. I sent her a message. I'm like, yo, I was so traumatized.
Hey,
can I please talk about this
and
break it down? Because it's very important. And it's important to have supportive family and friends. But the most important thing, my supervisor, I'm going to say her name, Dr. Tina. I love it to bits. But I remember when we started, she said, try that at least once a week. You do something that gives back to you. And she said to us, sitting at home and watching Netflix or movies in pajamas is not giving back to yourself because you're actually not giving any energy to yourself. But if you want to watch a movie, get up, get dressed, go to the cinema, and you've done something
for you.
For
you, because you
know?
Are enjoying
yes.
it. For your pleasure.
Go take a walk on the beach or like where I stay, it's beautiful. Take a walk around there. So she always said that, and I think from then I tried to maintain that no matter how busy I am, I have to do things that give back to me because your soul will be depleted, you know? And it's not against anything biblical to rest, because many times or a few times we are told to rest, you know, or take a nap and eat. And rest also comes in the form of switching everything off and just going to watch that movie and coming back, or spending the day hiking or whatever else you can find to do for yourself.
No, but you think, so actually now I'm thinking we should actually enter you now, like isn't it not just your career, but I mean, can we separate you from your career?
I don't think so. I feel like now it's an extension of me.
Yeah, I'm like, let's speak about you outside of your career, but then I realized, no, we can't really talk about you outside of that. But so then what do you do for fun? I mean, I know you love fun, but then what do you do for fun?
What do you mean?
excuse me, we went quad biking together.
Yes. So I like fun like that. I think I haven't always been a big club person. I can go with my friends and I'll enjoy, but I like karaoke more. I can't sing, guys.
She's not a drinker, people, so that it should be clear.
No, but also like, you know, the concept of going to clubs, people can differ and disagree, but you go out all night and you come back and you're exhausted, and then the next day you're tired the whole day.
Because you are recuperating.
Yes, and you came back at 4 o'clock in the morning just like, you know, but I like karaoke bars a lot. They're fun and I can't sing, but then they have a right to sing. And then I love watching movies. I like hiking. I like doing fun activities. So I went tobogganing. I thought it was pronounced toboggan because I'm black, but it's tobogganing.
What is that and where is
that? It's like a little kariki, like a little cart thing that you go on and it just slides down in it and then you can control the speed.
But wait, is it in a, how's the ground? Is it
it's soil? Like a little, it's got a little, I don't know if we can call it a railway, but it's like a little railway. Like, you know how trains have a little railway and then we go up the mountain and then you come back down. Not up the hill. The one here, it's just like a hill. So you go up the hill, come back down. So I love theme parks also.
I've never heard of it.
Tobogganing.
I've never heard of it.
I should take
you. I'm And then, writing that down.
So, and I love theme parks. Sadly, they closed ours here. I love like thrilling rides. If it's going to scare me, I am with it. I'll do it.
Would you do bungee jumping?
Yes, I want to do it. I've been thinking.
Would you skydiving?
And skydiving.
So you're like, wait, you are a Pisces. Like you're very wild for a Pisces. Like you adventurous, very adventurous.
The problem is that you guys want to box us.
Yes, because that's how I say. You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
If you're a Capricorn or Sage or Leo, I'd be like, adventure is your thing. But like you are a Pisces,
and
you're out here loving adventure.
A lot, a lot. But I'm also like an introverted. No, I'm an extroverted introvert. So I'm an introvert, but I can be very extroverted depending on the scenery. And I can also just choose not to talk to people.
I'm screaming. I am screaming. That's what I'm doing. Oh, my God. You're hilarious. No, so you do like fun and obviously adventure. No, but so then you do like your hair down. And that leads me to, excuse the pun, that leads me to the next question about, cameras are on. I'm sure they see you that you have very beautiful hair, by the way.
Thank you.
But it's natural. It's an afro. But, I mean, you also wear wigs. Or weaves, you do braids, and then sometimes you have it in an afro like that, like you have beautiful, healthy hair. And obviously, that's hair is very political.
Mm.
And I think that's something that you might have mentioned while we were coming here about hair. And I just wanted to touch on that. Like, what's your hair journey? What does hair mean to you? Because, I mean, we know that especially for Black women, it's very policed. Mm. It's very political, whether we like it or not.
Yeah. I think being a girl who went to... I mean, I don't know why we call things previously Model C because they still Model C even till today. But I went to those kinds of schools and obviously they had rules and regulations about our Black hair as they do in all schools that are not like township schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't understand the dynamics of our hair. And yeah, I think our journey begins there where you're in high school and you're a little bit perplexed about certain things where you're like, okay, but she dyed her hair black. And I can't have color in my hair. What's the difference, mm-hmm. you know? And then after that, I mean, I think it helps to have my mom and my gran who are super open-minded because then you'll be like, oh, I want to try this. And they're usually greatly supportive. But when I was a young girl, all I knew is that as a black child, my hair had to be neat. Every Sunday, I sat down and my gran will plait my hair. And that's where I think I get my little neat freakness from because my gran is extremely neat, extremely clean, and I was raised by her. So obviously it makes sense.
Because you said something about you used to what? Bath and change like four times a day?
Yeah, my gran wasn't playing. Like if I go play with other people, because this was in the township, to give context, you know, we play in the street with other kids. Mm-hmm. And I'd play for like 30 minutes, an hour. I'd never played longer than that. Come back a little bit dirty, either you bath and then I change and wear new clothes. Even if I don't bath immediately, then I'll bath at night. But I must change my clothes and wear clean clothes.
Yeah. Because obviously she's not the dead in her house. Like, I'm just imagining how much laundry she was doing though.
She used to wash laundry like every second or third day.
Because that's how, obviously.
Yes, and she also doesn't like very dirty clothes because she feels it's hard to wash very dirty clothes. So if I have a little bit of dirt, throw it in the wash, then wear clean clothes. So, yeah, that's just the woman my grandmother is.
I'm just like, okay. But then in terms of now, and at your age though, going back to, as you're saying, your hair was policed, how is it received now at work? Are you being told you need to put it in a certain way or you haven't had that experience yet?
No, I haven't had that experience. But every time I take my afro out, they're like, oh, your hair's so beautiful. Oh, we love your afro. Oh, I love your hair like this. And I appreciate when you tell me my hair is beautiful, but please don't tell me how you prefer my hair.
Because then it's like, I want you to keep it this way.
Yeah. And also like
if you, why must you have a wig or why must you?
Yes. And my other thing is, I mean, I've never had an afro routine because I don't, some things are not for me. Hey, like having a whole hair routine for my afro. So it just grows because it just grows. And I just do what I'm used to doing. And now, but it's also, I also feel like it's a little bit extra work than when I had relaxed hair because everyone started with relaxer, right? And me to have my hair like this for a whole month going to work, it's not going to work because you have to plait it every night to sort of keep it straight so that it doesn't look, it's just hectic.
It's just exhausting.
It's
so
exhausting.
Just like,
yeah, it's too much admin. And I like different kinds of hairstyles. And I think my greatest experimentation was going pink, which I miss a lot. And I feel what I was saying earlier on to Babalu was that I think hair is an accessory. And I always knew it, but I realized it more when I had my pink hair, because it just complete your outfit. And I know people like to be like, oh, but it's vanity, whatever. No, it's not. Okay. It just completes your outfit for you, and you're already beautiful, but who said you can't look more beautiful? You know, and try different hairstyles, do the things that make you happy, because I'm a genetic counselor and I work in the hospital, guys, and I had pink hair. So
I mean, obviously,
so don't limit yourself. And if you work in like a more very conservative space, then just tie it up in a bun.
So that's a question though, like in terms of professionalism and black people's hair, not even just black women's hair, but many black women though. Like, our hair is usually, I mean, I had dreads and I used to be told I'm not professional.
Yes.
And I intentionally had dreads because I was shaking up the space, because I was like, I will come in the science world and wear my hair, any dreads, because it's clean and it's neat.
Mm.
And I'm doing my work. What does my hair have to do with my work?
Mm.
So then when you had your pink hair, were you not getting any questions or comments about professionalism?
No, I think because there was a genetic counselor who used to work at where I work now, and she used to dye her hair like blue and whatever, but she was a white lady and all of that. So I think color was more better received, but I didn't get, they all loved the color. Some were surprised, but it seemed like they loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them were actually wishing that, can they also get braids? They can. They just won't last as long.
I'm not going to say anything. I'm not going to say anything there.
But they took it fine. And what I've learned about hair, and as you grow up, you know, when we are like in our 20s, trying to be feminist, trying to be all these things, we're like, oh, I'm not going to do my hair like this because it can't be. What the hair is your crown. Hair, yeah. We must do what. At the end of the day, whether we like it or not, it is your crown. And what you do to that hair on that day represents how you're feeling about yourself. So I'm open to people doing whatever they want on their hair. But I also don't like messy hair. You know that. Like, it must... You can do whatever. Just
You can't police hair. You see,
I can't police.
You can't, because you don't have your hair policed.
So yes, police, but like I feel like there's a big difference between hair that's dirty and very, like, there is an afro is not untidy, but if you just woke up and then part of it is like flat and doing other things, I mean, it's a different story, right? So, so I grew up and learned that it is actually our crown, and it's amazing to see how women feel more confident when they are having a hairstyle that represents them the way they want to be.
Oh, like when they change, don't they change? Because apparently there's something when women, not even just black women, white, black, colored, Indian, whatever color, when either you shave or change the color or cut it or change it, it shows. I think, what's the saying? Something about...
something incredible
is
about
to happen in your life. Yes, like hair is very representative of either a transformation or like a moment of like metamorphosis. Yeah. Is that how you say it? Yeah, anyway. So with you though, that's something that you said about fashion. You said hair matches. So she's a fashionista, guys. She is. I'm sure you watch the cameras on. Yes.
Today I'm wearing it.
Find it. Is your Insta private? Is your Insta private?
So it links with what you were saying earlier on and being out there and being with people. So I actually have two Instagrams. I have a private one with my private pictures, and it's protected.
Sorry, and clarify then, that the private pictures are not what you guys are thinking.
It's no.
Innocent private pictures.
It's innocent, like what I do on my day-to-day life.
Say that, but private. The word private, she's not nude, guys, so don't think she doesn't have an OnlyFans.
I just meant like what I do in my day-to-day life, and I keep my genetic counseling.
Because you want to keep your world sort of
private,
you know what I mean? Like, because I think already you're giving so much of yourself and you're so known. I mean, even now, doing this podcast is, again, giving of yourself, right? So I think obviously you do want to perhaps come back to yourself and, I don't know, recuperate. But the fashion question, though, you're a fashionista. Like, every day, Hoya Miracle, when you go to work, you're like out here looking good. Where does that come from? Like, that very creative side of you. Like, you're very creative as well, hey? Like, besides being a scientist, which obviously is like sometimes people think they're rigid or whatever, you actually have a very creative side. And like, you like looking cute. Let's talk about that. What does it do for you? What does it mean?
I'm laughing because looking cute, I think I've always looked decent. I mean, you knew me for a few years. So I don't think you, did I ever look messy? No. I was always decent looking. And then I think, but I,
sure, okay, yes. But you think?
But I think I said this to you. I think I've been sleeping on myself a little bit. Because one day I woke up and I was just like, girl, you are so hot. Why are you sleeping on yourself? You've got the clothes. So do what you know best is how to be creative with what you dress. Because as Babalo says, I am quite creative. And if I can sit here and have to paint or create artwork or create some handwork, like make things with my hands, I will sit and do it. Mm-hmm. I told you I wanted to do something for you, but I thought it was going to be extra because I didn't know if that's your love language. And I can be also a little bit extra with my gifts.
I'm crying.
So I'm that person. So I was just like, let how you feel inside reflect how you feel on the outside. Because I think the other thing with women is we tend to be afraid to dress how we want or how we feel because it's been engraved in us that we have to be modest. But why can't... And being sexy does not mean I'm unmodest. And being pretty or looking like a fashionista doesn't make me unmodest, you know? And I think...
Or doesn't make you not have... Because we think beauty and brains can coexist.
Yes, yes.
You know what I mean? Like a very problematic way of all beautiful women...
Are doing
this is
other
what people say, yeah, you know what I mean?
They're like, influencers, no, but no.
I can be a scientist and be like a fashionista at the
same
time.
And be cute, you know? And a girl must look cute. And I mean, my mom, my guys, my grandmother, I talk about her a lot because she raised me.
You love your grandmother.
But she's those people who grew up dressing nice and she's like, yo, you know, back in my days, I used to wear this and I have a dress that belonged to her. And what I love about my grand, she's also like, wear the outfits now that you want to wear and not when you
don't
turn 60.
Don't wait for an event. Or...
Yeah, and she's like, when you turn 60, when you really can't kind of wear it and then now you're having a midlife crisis because you didn't do the things that you had to do when you were young. So if you feel like dressing a particular way and you want to look as pretty as you feel in the inside, then do that. And it doesn't matter how people receive it. It's about how you feel in it. Because we know, I mean, no matter what anyone says, we know if you're looking good, you feel a little bit more confident. It doesn't make you materialistic. It just makes you human. And I mean, the Bible also talks about beauty. So, yeah.
No, so I, looking at time.
Oh, we're done.
No, we're not yet. We are about to finish. We have like 4 minutes. Because I have another guest coming in. For the next episode. Yes. But obviously I have to invite you again because I think we're not done. Like I still have things that I haven't checked here. Like you see, I have a whole notebook with questions. Also, I have like leading things that I wanted to ask because these are not questions. This is a conversation, guys. So I was going to ask you to like just speak about your experience with... So this is not all roses. I'm sure you have... And maybe it's about racism and sexism and whatever, but you might have haters or people that are jealous. Especially when it was like, oh, you're the first black person. How did you deal with... Did you receive any hate?
I did.
And how did you deal with that?
Directly and indirectly. So I am naturally a little bit calm, right? So I don't like... I'm not very reactive a lot of the times, most of the times. So I think I lost a friend or maybe two when the articles came out, and it shook me because that was the only... I even went back to the chats to see had we argued about something, whatever, but people just hated it, I guess. And I never went back to address it because it coincided with that. And they couldn't even say, like, congratulations or stuff like that.
Yeah.
It was so weird. And then, so I just moved on because, like, I can't...
Yeah, you can't also force people to love you or...
Yeah, and I can't go back and ask about it. And I'm just like... Okay.
But I mean, you know then that it's about that then.
Yeah. And then because of how they reacted when the articles and the interviews were coming out.
Couldn't even pretend like congratulations.
No.
Like a message.
No. And then I had someone then claiming this story. Anyway, I'm going to say it because it was on Facebook. So it's not private. I can't remember which radio show interviewed me. And then this person and her people, they were posting about how she's also black and all this that was going on. So I hadn't seen it. My friend saw it and she was so stressed. But in my shock, I just laughed about it, Baba. Because I was like, you know, when you're in shock, you know that TikTok video where everyone goes, hi?
Yes, yes.
That was me. I was just sitting there going, hi, and then move. Hi.
Because you were shook.
Because I was shook at how, and the person never identified as black, you know? And it was just so interesting for me to just see that. And
but wait, is the person colored or?
Yes, mixed ancestry. Mixed,
okay.
So, yeah.
Okay.
So it brought a lot of tension then. And because it was public, it was on Facebook, so I can just say that it was just weird.
That's interesting. The people, I think there's something about not wanting to see other people achieve. And I don't know why that is. That's just a very weird human weakness.
Yeah, because
that's so weird.
And the friends went from the one article to the other article to continue doing the same thing there. And my one friend went and called, my friend and my cousin actually went and called them to order because they were like, what you're doing is wrong. So that didn't hurt me at the moment. Yeah. But when I thought about it, and I was just like, yo, because I was laughing on the day because I was shocked most. You know that shock where you can only
you
laugh.
You either cry or laugh.
So yeah. So only after that, then you realize. But then, I mean, there's always a little bit of microaggression, micro this. And as you know, I'm Christian. So I think praying about things is very important. Mm-hmm. Because prayer is reflection and it just grounds you a little bit and not focusing, try not to focus on those things. They hurt, let it hurt for a day or two, but don't let it hurt you every day now.
Yeah, like don't mull over it.
Because the moment you let it take over who you are, you actually can't focus at work. You won't do as best as you need to do. So you also have to find a way to say, you know what, I'm blocking this out and I'm moving on with my life. And you don't have to, I know people are like, oh, you have to address this, you have to address this. You don't have to address every attack that comes at you.
Ooh.
Because it's a waste of your energy. Choose where you're putting your energy.
I receive that.
You know?
You don't have to address every, sorry, I need to jot that down. Like, never, that's a lesson I need.
Yeah, never. Actually, a lot of things happen and I just look at them and move away.
Mm-hmm.
They sort themselves out and it's that thing, I have to think about it in English because I was thinking in Sepedi.
Screaming.
But sometimes in life, some situations are just solved by your silence. And it goes contrary to some posts I read that, oh, silence is always not necessary. Let the narrative. I'm like, guys, you know what? The moment you just mise certain things, and those who don't know what to mise is, it means to ignore certain things. Actually, the truth just comes out by itself by you ignoring.
I mean, it's not easy, but it's very powerful. Because sometimes you actually give, I'm not going to mention what, but like I've seen how with me keeping quiet on certain things, didn't give them the power. Fire and power. Because then sometimes I realized, had I responded in certain cases, like how the person was, because you know how you have a pattern of replying.
Yes.
People think, we know this one.
Mm.
And then obviously it was going to, and then it didn't happen. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So there's power in silence. There's power in my
So you choose your battles. I think that said a lot, that there are certain times when maybe you need to create clarity. But even with this one who went on Facebook and the people, I said, nothing.
Because I think you want to give, obviously because attention was on you, media attention was on you, what's going to happen is newspapers were going to run the story then.
Yes.
Adjusted then.
And then I'm
fire.
Just like all over
now
for
now you
no
are
reason.
Caught up. Yes.
Yes.
Now, but also now it's like debates and whatnot.
Yes.
And anyway, Malebo, I am grateful for your time. This
Thank
was a
you.
Great conversation. We learned so much about you. I mean, good luck with your future.
Thank you.
Good luck with your PhD. Good luck with changing the story of the black child, and I'm really proud of you. So thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Babalo.
To the guest of Conversations with Chaka podcast, that was Malebo Malope, soon to be doctor, who's the first black genetic counselor in South Africa. Namaranjane. It's just very interesting, as you can tell. And please join me next time for a different webinar or rather podcast with a different guest. And goodbye, everybody. #ConversationsWithChaka podcast.